feasts in their homes and invited their sisters to eat and drink with them. And after a feast was over, Job would send and have them made clean. And early in the morning, Job would offer a burnt offering for each of them, because he thought, my children may have sinned and cursed God in their hearts. And Job did this every time. Wow, what a man. So he was honest, he was hardworking, he was a great father, and he loved God. He said he was the greatest man among all the peoples of the East. Wow, that's quite a testimony, isn't it? And quite a reputation. But then it says later on, it's Satan comes before the Lord and he starts to say things about Job. And actually, God instigates the conversation and actually recommends Job. And he says, consider my servant Job. And it says, Satan says, Job honors God for a good reason. You have put a wall around him, his family and everything he owns. You have blessed the things he has done. His flocks and his herds are so large they almost cover the land. But reach out your hand and destroy everything he has, and he will curse you to your face. Wow. So the devil's saying, well, the reason that Job is so faithful to you is because of all that he has and all that he owns. And so, of course, Job is then put to the test. He's allowed to be put to the test. And we're going to look at those things as we go through. So just bear in mind, you've got this Job who's got a fantastic reputation, a lovely family, and many things. He's very wealthy. And then let's see just briefly what happens to him over his life and what we can learn from that. So Job chapter 1 and verse 13. Now this is a catastrophe. So we've had Job's character. Now we've got Job's catastrophe. And verse 13. One day Job's sons and daughters were eating and drinking wine together at the oldest brother's house, and a messenger came to Job and said, the oxen were ploughing and the donkeys were eating grass nearby when the Sabians attacked and carried them away. They killed the servants with swords, and I am the only one who escaped to tell you. The messenger was still speaking when another messenger arrived and said, lightning from God fell from the sky. It burned up the sheep and the servants, and I am the only one who escaped to tell you. The second messenger was still speaking when another messenger arrived and said, the Babylonians sent three groups of attackers that swept down and stole your camels and killed your servants, and I am the only one who escaped to tell you. The third messenger was still speaking, and at this point I'd be thinking, no more messengers, no more messengers. And the other messenger arrived and said, your sons and daughters were eating and drinking wine together at the oldest brother's house, and suddenly a great wind came from the desert, hitting all corners of the house at once. The house fell on the young people, and they are all dead. And I am the only one who escaped to tell you. And when Job heard this, he got up and he tore his robes, and he shaved his head to show how sad he was. And then he bowed down to the ground to worship God. Now that tells you a lot about the character of Job, just in that sentence. Because, to be honest, it doesn't take much in our lives to get a little bit cross and disillusioned. And it's the little things, isn't it, sometimes, like the washing machine breaking down, and you think, well, I've got a pile of washing, and you know, and now that's got to be fixed. Or there's something else that happens, and it, you know, you get a flat tire on your way to an important meeting. It's like, why am I being tormented? Why is this happening to me? And it's these little things that we think's the end of the world, and we're soon grumbling and complaining. And here we have Job with this mountain of catastrophes. I mean, it's beyond belief, isn't it, really? How the wind can come and hit all four corners of the house at one time. Doesn't the wind normally just come in one direction? And Job, instead of just screaming out to God, you've destroyed my family, my business, my wealth, it says that he bows down to the ground to worship God. And I thought, wow, that is such a challenge, because sometimes we find it hard to worship even when things are going well. And here is a man who, despite losing everything apart from his wife, is bowing down to worship God. And actually, the wife that he's left with, when she sees all these things happening, and actually then Job gets covered with boils as well. So it didn't matter where he sat or where he moved, whether he laid down, stood up. It said he was covered in this. There was no comfort. There's no place that he could go where he could be easy. It was just a constant thing. And it says that in Job 2 verse 9, Job's wife says, "Curse God and die." Why are you trying to carry on and be this amazing man? Why are you being this godly man? For heaven's sake, just curse God and die. Be done with it. And part of us feels like, well, Job's wife, that's a bit harsh, you know. But we also have to remember that Job's wife had lost her children. She'd lost her wealth. She'd lost her position in the community. But she was also watching her husband in great pain. And you can understand to some degree that she just wanted it all to stop. Just stop it. And she thought that was the best way of dealing with it. Job was also surrounded by some lovely friends. So Job chapter 2 and verse 11 says, "Now Job had three friends, Eliphaz, Bildad, and Zophar. And when these friends heard about Job's troubles, they agreed to meet and visit him. They wanted to show their concern and to comfort him. They saw Job from afar away, and he looked so different, they almost didn't recognize him. And they began to cry loudly and tore their robes and put dirt on their heads to show how sad they were. Then they sat on the ground with Job 7 days and seven nights, and no one said a word to him because they saw how much he was suffering." Now, we know that these three friends, we say they were Job's comforters, don't we? They didn't always give quite the advice that God would have suggested that they gave, but they were there. They did come and they were concerned, and they spent 7 days and nights just sitting with him, not saying anything. And that was probably their finest moment, because after that it went a little bit downhill. If they'd have just stayed and not said anything, they might have done a better job. But at least they were there, and I don't think they were that much of a comfort to him. But then Job starts to sort of wonder what's going on. He must be thinking, what is going on? And I think he seeks God, and he wants God to speak to him and bring comfort to him and show what's, give him answers to these questions. But instead of answers, God meets with Job and asks him questions. And you think, okay, what kind of questions did he ask? Now, I suggest that you go home tonight and you read Job 38, Job 39. Because God reveals himself sometimes in the most unexpected ways. And sometimes we think God's going to do something with one way, and he does it completely the opposite. But I read this and I was blown away by what God says to Job. And I'm just going to jump from bits. There's just some little things because we haven't got time to read it all. But in Job 38 and verse 4, he starts to speak to Job, and he said, "Where were you, Job, when I made the earth's foundations? Tell me if you understand. Who marked off how big it should be? Surely you know. Who shut the doors to keep the sea in when it broke through and it was born? When I made the clouds like the coat for the sea and wrapped it in dark clouds, when I put limits on the sea and put its doors and bars in place, when I said to the sea, you may come this far, but no farther, this is where your proud waves must, where your proud waves must stop. Have you ever ordered the morning to bring or show the dawn where its place was? Have you ever gone into the storehouse of the snow or seen the storehouses for hail, which I save for times in trouble, for days of war and battle? Where is the place from which light comes? Who cuts a waterway for the heavy rains and sets a path for the sounds for the thunderstorms? Who waters the land where no one lives? Can you bring out the stars on time, Job? Can you shout an order to the clouds and cover yourself with a flood of water? Who put wisdom inside the mind or understanding in the heart? And we can go on and on and on as God speaks to Job. Can you do this, Job? Have you ever done that, Job? He's not having a go at Job, but he's showing Job that he ultimately is God. We have no rights before God at all. We shouldn't expect anything from him. He is the creator. He put everything in place. But yet so many times we think that we have rights, that we expect things from God. But he's saying, I am God. I am the creator. I am the one. I have the plan. I know what's best. God gave Job an ocean of questions to remind him who he was. And there are times we question, but God doesn't always give us the answer. God is God. He knows what he's doing. And sometimes we can't trace his hand in the circumstance, but you can always trust his heart. And that is a big challenge, isn't it? That when we can't see the answers and we don't know the answers and God isn't giving us the answers that we so desperately want, we know his heart is for us and that he loves us. I'm going to sing a really well-known hymn that is just a challenge as well as a way of worshipping. It's When Peace Like a River, and we're going to sing it as a challenge as well. When peace like a river attendeth my way. And can we say, it is well with my soul? That is the place where we should aim to be when things are not as comfortable as we want them to be. And we don't have the answer, whether it's in our life or whether we see it in one of our loved ones' lives. I think Job, if he'd been around, that would have been his anthem. And it's great that we can sing along with that. But I thought we wouldn't end on a sad note. We'll finish with the end of the story. It's like a good book. Jump to the end and find out what happens. And it says in verse 12 of chapter 42. The Lord blessed the last part of Job's life even more than the first part. Job had 14,000 sheep, 6,000 camels, 1,000 teams of oxen, and 1,000 female donkeys. Job also had 7 sons and 3 daughters. He named the first Jemima, the second daughter Keziah, and the third daughter Keren. There were no other women in all the land as beautiful as Job's daughters. And their father Job gave them land to own along with their brothers. And after this, Job lived 140 years. He lived to see his children, his grandchildren, his great-grandchildren, and his great-great-grandchildren. And then Job died, He was old and he had lived many years. You know, when we are faithful to God through the testing, he will bless us so much, pressed down and overflowing. He is no man's debtor. Now, we don't always see the answers to prayers and the blessings in this life, but what we have got is a promise of a home in heaven that is far beyond even what Job dreamt about and owned. And there's that promise that all tears, all fear, all pain, all anxiety, all war, and death itself will have disappeared. We've got a lot to look forward to, haven't we? That home in glory. And most of all, to be in the presence of the God who asked all those questions, who put the sea in place, who brought the stars, who gave us blessings that are new every morning. We have a faithful God that we serve, and I hope that we'll be able to say as we grow closer to him, through every trial and circumstance, it is well with my soul.